to In Beta, a semi-regular conversation between physiotherapy educators who are interested in curriculum reform, innovation and critical thinking about teaching and learning. My name is Ben Ellis. I'm a lecturer in physiotherapy at Oxford Brookes University in the UK.
And I'm Michael Rowe, a lecturer in the Department of Physiotherapy at the University of the Western Cape in South Africa. In Beta is an international virtual community that's free for anyone to join. You can find us on Google+ by searching for the In Beta community or using the In Beta hashtag on Twitter. And now, on with the conversation. So, maybe just to start, do you want to just talk a little bit about what drove the change? What made you decide that the change was necessary?
Well, all right, then. It probably makes sense to start by putting the very particular change that we made to the assessment form that our clinicians used in a broader context. So at AUT, Auckland University of Technology in Auckland, New Zealand, we have a very big physiotherapy school. It's a four-year bachelor's degree. We haven't moved to a master's or doctoral entry program by choice. And the fourth year is clinical, largely. And from about 2006 onward, we conducted a sort of six-year root and branch review of the curriculum and wanted to really look at every facet of the curriculum. And we made a lot of changes to the structure of the teaching and the learning and the names of the modules, the courses, or we call them papers, confusingly. We did a lot of curriculum change. And then the students in 2012 started coming through, 2013 I should say, started coming through into the first year of the new program, and gradually we transitioned through. So by 2014, we had to start thinking then about the students going on to placements, onto clinical placements. And most of our students go into placements which are in the public sector. A few of them go into private practices. And we would have in excess of 100 students, maybe sometimes as many as 120, 130 students out on placement at any one time. And they'd be on placements in the sort of top half of the North Island, so spread across quite a large area of geography and across a whole range of different clinical specialties. And they do quite long blocks of study in one place, and they move around a relatively small number of places, but within a particular locality. So they will stay within, a district health board area and move within that space. They won't travel around the country much. And that's primarily to reduce their cost of accommodation while they're away from home. So we had to think about how the students were being assessed. And virtually every school in Australia and New Zealand has traditionally followed a model called the APP, which is a form that clinicians fill out at the end of the placement, which scores the students and gives them gradings for different components of their work. And it's quite a structured process, and as these things tend to be, because they have to deal with students who might be working in older adults and somebody else working with elite athletes and somebody else in intensive care, they have to be quite generic and they're instrumental. So by that I mean that they tend to take tasks that the students have to complete and sort of break them down into component parts, and then the supervisor ticks off those component parts, and then when the students got all the ticks in the right place, they pass that bit and they get scored overall for the quality of their placement. So I think that's probably not that unusual for the students internationally. One of the things that we tried to do with the curriculum overall, though, was to make the humanities much stronger, so to bring in aspects of physiotherapy that traditionally maybe hadn't been given much focus, and to try and make those things overt. So, for instance, in our first year, we have a paper that's a very basic introduction to therapeutic touch. We're basically massage. And we teach the students about effleurage and petrissage, but really the paper isn't about that at all. It's about negotiating contact with a person, putting your hands on somebody for the first time, dealing with the kind of interpersonal difficulties of negotiating undressing and gowning and respect, and the kind of ethical questions about how to touch and how not to. By virtue of the fact that they're learning about how to do those things, they're also learning about effleurage and petrissage, and they're starting to get some good physical handling skills. So when it came to the clinical assessment in year four, one of the things that struck me about the APP form was that by instrumentalizing and sort of making all of the things into tasks, there was something being lost in that process. There was something about the subjective, the softer, the intersubjective, the humanistic aspects that so many of us as clinicians know are important in physiotherapy that weren't really getting given credit or weren't really being brought out. They were being hidden by the tool itself. Because a lot of those things can't really be easily devolved to a task. I mean, how do you break down empathy into three bullet points and tick them off? But we know that those things are really important. So we decided we'd try and revise the way we did the assessment. And so essentially what we did was differentiated the students' assessments into competencies and capabilities. Now, this is a very artificial distinction, but it just worked for us. But we said the competencies will be those things which you can break down into a task, skills, if you like. And those things were already well represented by the APP form. So we didn't change them at all. But then we talked about this idea of capabilities, and that was really the intersubjective stuff, the humanistic stuff. And we wanted a way to actually assess those differently, but still have a rigorous mode form of assessment so that the clinicians had confidence that when they were saying the students were good at this, they were actually good at it. So what we did, and I think this is quite radical and quite interesting, was to say to the clinicians individually, wherever you work, whatever ward or clinic or whatever space you work in, there must be for you two or three key capabilities that really matter to you in your work. So, for example, if you work with elite athletes, it may be that it's really important for you that you can motivate these people to work through the whatever particular regime, treatment, therapeutic, rehabilitative program you want. So motivation is something you've got to be able to have if you're going to work in this area. If you work in, say, pediatrics, it might be that you've got to have compassion. You've got to be a good listener. You've got to be somebody who can sit with a family who might be distressed or grieving or unhappy and be able to handle that. So in each area, we felt that there would be clinicians who would say unique things about their particular perspective. And just to be clear, we asked individual clinicians. We didn't say to a unit, or say a medical ward, you decide on your team's response to this. We asked Jill, we asked Juani, we asked John, we asked individual clinicians, said, for you, what matters the most? Give us three capabilities that matter to you. And we asked them then, once they'd defined those, to articulate those to the student or when they first arrived on their placement, to explain them to them and explain why they mattered. And then during the course of that long placement, to actually model it to them, show the students in what ways it was important that they were compassionate or empathic or a good team builder or enthusiastic and motivational. And then to assess those things in their own way by the end of the placement. And we didn't define how they determined the students had it. The only thing that we said was that we wanted to ensure that the students developed their own response to that capability. So the clinician might say, for instance, excuse me, the clinician might say that it's really important that you can motivate the clients, the patients, but it's for the student to work out their way of motivating. And one of the things that we said, for instance, was that if it need be, and you get to the end of the placement and you're not sure whether the student really has got it, you can set up an assessment. You might, for instance, give the student a particular client who needs motivating. You know that they're going to have an issue with motivation, and you ask the students to develop some kind of exercise program or some intervention of some sort, and to demonstrate this key capability of motivation to the client. And then they would be assessed not by whether they actually had necessarily tried to motivate the client, but by whether the client had been motivated. So a week later, they might be reassessed by the clinician to see whether they actually had been motivated by what the student had done. So we started this in 2014, and immediately the clinicians grabbed it. They seemed to really like it. And that was a little bit surprising to us to some extent, but then maybe not, because what we were doing was giving the clinicians a sense of more autonomy and respecting the fact that they were all unique and different, and their contexts were different. And we didn't have to do there was a fair bit of work by our clinical coordinators to explain the new process to the clinicians, but it didn't take that long. And at the end of the year, we collected all of the capabilities together, because they put their capabilities onto the form that they'd assessed with the student, and they sent those in and we collated them. And there were hundreds of different terms and phrases. In fact, I can share with you the summation of the language that we've got this year. And I made an Excel spreadsheet of them, and it runs to pages of different terms and phrases. And so, for instance, people talked about things like adaptability and compassion and personal resilience and building a rapport and time management and being non-judgmental and adaptability. And so that was, I suppose, the end of the first process. And we've continued that now ever since. So it's now into its third year. It'll be the fourth year at the end of this year that we've done it. And each year it just grows and becomes more and more interesting and valuable as you start to see these patterns of things emerge. And perhaps the most important, I'm just looking at them here, I'm just seeing there's one here called Inspiring Hope. And one of the things that came out of it for us in terms of the school and the curriculum was what was really obvious in all of this language was that we didn't do anything in the curriculum to prepare the students for this. That was the one thing. And then secondly, we didn't really see much evidence of this language being present in the scope of practice for the practitioners, for the professionals. And yet, of course, from what the clinicians were telling us, these things were really important to them. So there was this gap between what the profession, what you have to be able to do if you're going to be a good physio, and then what the schools are preparing you for, or what the profession recognizes as being important. And so we started then asking questions about, well, if we want our students to, say, inspire hope, well, how do we do that? What do we mean by hope? How do we staircase it? How do we develop it from just the first ideas that this matters maybe in the first year to the students through to some more sort of complex concepts of what hope is and what it isn't? And then maybe through to some ideas about how hope relates to physiotherapy and how their own personal ideas around hope matter. So that when they go on to placement in the fourth year, it's not a surprise if somebody says to them, look, you need to inspire hope in your patients. They'll know what it is. And so it raised the question for us about, well, where are we doing this stuff? And where is this recognized? And of course, the third facet of this is very few people are writing about this stuff in physiotherapy. Very few people are identifying in what ways this kind of stuff is relevant to physios and how we as a profession relate to those things. Because to the outside world, if you looked at physiotherapy, you wouldn't really see language of things like creativity or adaptability or hope featuring very strongly at all. You would think that those things don't matter to us. So just to kind of wrap up, it started off with a project which was based on a bit of a frustration with the current form, the document that our clinicians were asked to assess our students with, thinking it was a bit too objective, a bit too mechanical, a bit too mathematical. And what it's ended up with is some really interesting thoughts and conversations about the subjective aspects of physiotherapy that aren't really recognized or written about or taught in our university programs or respected by the profession. So that's a very long answer to a short question, really.
No, it's fantastic. That's a really great background and context that you've established there. I think one of the things that we've really been struggling with in our department is this idea that the clinical assessment is in large part a subjective process. You know, it's kind of like you know what professionalism is when you see it, but to write it down as a series of tick list items, it's very easy to say, yes, the student is professional because they were punctual, were dressed appropriately, greeted the patient by name, blah, 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 blah. And yet you can look at a student who does all of those things and still come to the conclusion that the student was not professional. But it's very difficult to write that on a form that tries to quantify something that is inherently subjective. And I think what you've done in the splitting of the form into competence and capabilities is you've taken that capabilities section, you've said this is inherently subjective and we're not even going to try and define it, describe it. And so that's why you can have hundreds of different capabilities that are described by clinicians. And as a department, you don't even need to know what those things mean. As long as the clinician is able to model it, describe it, assess it, you've kind of abstracted all of that stuff out of your assessment process and given it to the clinician and say, what does this mean to you? And we're not going to tell you what this means. What does it mean to you in your context?
And of course, one of the side effects of that is that for some clinicians, possibly many clinicians, they're being asked for the first time to think, well, what are those two or three things that really matter to me in my context? What are those things that really matter to me as an orthopedic physio on a ward, or as somebody who works with people with chronic pain? If I had to limit it to three things, what are they? And so it starts an internal dialogue for that person maybe to think about some of those subjective things that probably nobody else has really asked them to value or identify up until that point. I think that aspect of respect for the clinicians is quite important. It says that, well, you know better than anybody what matters in your location, what matters to you.
Yeah.
I think the critical point there is, though, to try and emphasize that you don't want the students necessarily to mimic the clinicians and just do it my way. I'm just saying to you that from my experience, these things matter in my area. Now you've got to find your way as a student to how you're going to demonstrate this in your own way. So there is a kind of responsibilization going on there that you have to take responsibility for these aspects of your way of being, your behavior.
You talk about introducing these kind of more humanistic components into practice, and then you talk about the massage example, which I think is a really nice example of using content to teach other things. And so rather than just saying, like, you know, this is about massage, this is where you put your hands, this is how hard you press, you're teaching that, but you're also introducing them to this idea of, you know, being in someone else's space, intimate touch, respect for that space, all of those things. And you're right, when you try to take those humanistic components and reduce them to a tick list, then I don't see how you can keep that the essence of what you're trying to do, because it is then just reduced to a series of, I guess, technical behaviors that the student can mimic. Make sure that you stand here, do this, say this. You get all the marks, and then, you know, you haven't actually demonstrated that you've connected with the patient at all.
But of course, I mean, we know the reasons why that happens. It's classic kind of, I suppose, scientific rationale that you're trying to develop an objective measure of the student's ability. And so to break things down into the most rudimentary form and to strip them of all the kind of subjectivity and say, well, look, when it comes down to it, can you put this thing on that thing? Can you put A plus B equals C? Let's just strip it back to the most basic level. Then you're more likely to have some kind of reliable measure of students' achievement. One of the most reliable ways you can develop a test is to simplify it down to the point where it's ridiculous. And there comes a point in some of these tests where the task that the students have to perform is so stripped of all of its kind of juice that it's so far removed from the reality of real physiotherapy practice that it starts to have limited utility. And I mean, just by contrast with that, I mean, as you know, Michael, I'm a very keen gardener, and there's an idea of gardening which comes from permaculture, which says that you don't just plant a tree in a garden to do one thing. Sure, the tree might look nice, but if it only looks nice, then you've probably planted the wrong tree. If you can have a tree that looks nice, that also captures nitrogen from the atmosphere, that also produces fruit and provides wind shelter, then all the better.
Mm.
So when you're planting stuff in your garden, try to plant things that do three or four or five things at the same time. Now, of course, in physio assessments, in most medical assessment type tests, that's the opposite of what people try to do. They try to simplify and strip things down to the most basic level. But in education and in philosophy, that kind of machinic learning, where you're just moving widgets around, is, it might be scientifically valid and reliable, but it's actually completely removed from the reality of practice, of what people experience, and it's an abstraction. So maybe the essence, the key here is to maybe keep some of that where you have to have it, hence why we kept large parts of the tasks and assess them in the same way. We didn't change them. But where it was, where we were talking about really complex ideas, like your ability to manage time, creativity was another one. I mean, how do you assess creativity with a tick sheet? And so why bother? Why not try instead to develop an assessment form that is true to the spirit of what you're trying to do?
I'm just looking at your one example here where you talk about inspiring hope. That's another example where, you know, there's no way that you can reduce that to a series of discrete tasks. That's going to look different, not only in every clinical context, but for every patient.
And I'd go further as well and say that in an effort to define that in narrow ways that are easily accessible, we do an injustice to physiotherapy. We do an injustice to the thing that we are so desperate to promote and to encourage people to value, that we ourselves undermine it by trivializing it and simplifying some of those things. Physiotherapy is not, as David Hume called, a bundle of qualities. It's not a composite of bits. Certainly, it's got some bits to it. So the whole is infinitely greater than the sum of its parts.
Mm.
So if we take those things that elevate physiotherapy beyond the mundane, and we reduce them by some kind of measurement into things that are just simple tasks, we do an injustice to the profession, and we undermine ourselves. Now, that to me is the strongest argument against the kind of scientism that's influenced physiotherapy for a long time. It's that it's good for some things, but it's been overused, and particularly in these kind of areas, what this project I think has shown is that there's a real appeal and a real practical utility to measuring the subjective, the intersubjective, the humanistic stuff really carefully and really simply, and then seeing what it opens up. And what it's opened up for us is a really interesting set of ideas around the things that really matter to people.
I suppose the one thing that this really does rely on is a high level of trust in your assessors. One of the things that that we're constantly talking about in my department is having to defend your mark. You've got to make, you know, loads of notes to, so that if you do fail a student, the student comes back and you know, asks the department to for a remark or whatever. You need to have the comments to support the decision that you've made. How do you get around that when you're kind of relying on your clinician or your assessor to make a subjective decision? Do they have to write a little reflective summary that explains what the student did and why that conforms to their definition of whatever their capability is? Do they assign a grade? Is it just competent, not competent? How do they? What are the actual kind of mechanics of that capability section of the assessment form?
Yeah, it's graded. It's graded in just the same way as the competencies. It's based on a conversation that the clinician has, an ongoing conversation throughout the placement as to what this means for them and what they're looking for. It's contestable in exactly the same way as the judgments about competency. So it doesn't function in a technical way any differently to any of the other tasks. The only difference is that it's asking for a different kind of expression for a different kind of issue. So instead of ranking this and saying this has got five parts to it, you have a negotiated conversation between the clinician and the student to say, look, this really matters here. Let's see how you do. And as the placement progresses, you I think it does engender a more mature conversation between the two about what this concept means. And then my sense is that there are just as many disputes over perhaps more about with the competencies than with the capabilities. But it's not as if the capabilities aren't ever disputed. We still have clinicians who maybe take a more simplistic view of the capabilities. Alongside some of the really profound stuff, there's lots of mentions of things like communication skills and flexibility. So there's a few stereotypes in there where people look like they haven't really been able to think too deeply about these things. But that's okay, because over time those things develop, and at least they are having a conversation with themselves, their colleagues and their students about these things and comparing. And of course it's all visible, it's all open, so people can see what other people are saying and adapt accordingly. So I don't think has been particularly an issue, the validity of the assessment. I don't think that's changed at all, really, in respect of the different kinds of assessment. The same issues are always there.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds like this is a, especially that capabilities part, this sounds like something that evolves over time. You're not taking a snapshot of the student in a one-hour exam and saying, in this exam, you've demonstrated the ability to inspire hope in your patient. It sounds like you're saying that this is something that the clinician observes over a long period of time. And maybe during the exam, they're looking for the kind of manifestation of something that they know has been in process for a long time. Or is that not really how it works?
No, it's exactly that. And I think one of the interesting things about it is, of course, that often the competencies that we assess students on are task and performance competencies that can be set up in a moment. The student demonstrates it or doesn't demonstrate it, passes it or doesn't. I mean, we all experience that as students ourselves. The test at the end of the semester or the end of the year, where you go into a room and you have to rig up some equipment and do something to a patient, and then you pass or fail on the basis of your performance. One of the things about competency-based assessment like that, that kind of task-based stuff, the itemization of those kind of tasks, they are very amenable to the very quick test of performance. Well, these things aren't at all. This one here, situational awareness. I'm just looking down the list of some of these things. Situational awareness. So I can't imagine how you would... passion. Here's another one. Passion. How do you come into a test room for a 15-minute exam to test your passion?
Right.
As a physio. I mean, how do you do that?
Right.
So, of course, what has to happen is that has to be thought through, discussed, debated, argued. The student has to work out, well, what does that mean for me? How... Is it in the way that I turn up at work in the morning and I'm really bouncy and happy? Is it just that I smile all the time? Is it that I'm quick to answer the clinician's questions? Is it that I go home at night and do lots of reading and I'm really intense when I'm at work? What is it? And so it's this long iterative process that comes through. And the clinician has to think, well, for them, what kind of behaviours am I looking for? And maybe why is it that passion matters more than, say, teamwork or adaptability? What am I looking for? And so there's this conversation that unfolds. You can't possibly do it in a 15-minute test. And so it takes some of that pressure off the big performance, the kind of performance anxiety that people get. And it's an unfolding. Now, of course, I mean, one of the other things about task performance, those kind of tests that were done at the end of the semester, is they are the model of the kind of acute episodic treatment that physios have done for so long. That is a repeated task performance. Now, what this kind of assessment does, this kind of intersubjective exploration of these ideas that physios say are so important, is it models a different kind of care. It models care rather than cure. It models the longer term rather than the short term. It models the chronic and long term rather than the acute. It models the working with people rather than working on people. And the reason that's so important, I think, is that as time goes by, we know that a lot of the acute and episodic stuff is disappearing. We've talked in the past, I've written about this, about how acute and episodic physio management is going to be replaced by people who are cheaper to train and to pay for than us. We can see this all the time in terms of therapy assistants, massage therapists, exercise physiologists, people taking over that work that we used to do, the kind of acute and short-term stuff. And one of the things that sets physio apart is all of the other stuff, the stuff that's captured by these capabilities. And so having a better sense of how to value those things in our students, teach them, put them into our scopes of practice, make a virtue of them, link them into how they transform people's lives, our patients' and clients' lives, it's going to be really important. And so getting away from the idea of a quick 15-minute test of your ability to put an ultrasound machine on, God forbid, and moving to the idea of how do you explore with the student passion as a therapist, complexity, personal safety, adaptability, personal resilience, creativity. How do you do that? You can't do that with a 15-minute test. So let's think about some other ways.
Let's say I'm a student, I'm on a pediatric placement, and I'm really not into pediatrics. I'm never going to go into pediatrics once I graduate, but my clinician wants me to be passionate. How do you negotiate that sort of situation? All I want to do is get through this block. I just want to pass. Do I just take my chances and, you know, fail the passion component?
Well, I think some of these, I don't know of any one of these capabilities that isn't in some respects universal. So passion, for instance, or creativity or empathy, let's take that as an example. I mean, I've worked in pediatrics for many years and know that your ability to sit and listen to parents who are in severe distress, anxious and panicking, is so important in pediatrics. But there are aspects of that that I might not get as a student. I just can't relate to them. Well, what you're saying in some respects is these things like passion and empathy and creativity are features of physiotherapy in all aspects. So this is just happens to be a pediatric location. For you to try and interrogate and test and explore how you are relating to that concept. So is it that you are not passionate, or you're just not passionate about this? Is it that you're not empathic at all, or is it that you can't find the reason to be empathic here in this location? I work a lot of the time with psychotherapists and psychologists at AUT. That's the team of people I work with primarily now. And one of the things that psychotherapists have taught me is the importance of insight. The psychotherapists are much more interested, certainly here at AUT, are much more interested in the idea that you help a person gain insight than they are that you rehabilitate them or treat them or fix them. Had a very profound effect on the way I thought about this, because actually what we're doing with our students here is trying to get them to gain insight into themselves as physiotherapists. And of course, that's what an educational program should always be about. So it's not necessarily that you have to be passionate about my field in my way, but I'm saying that to be successful in this placement, you have to have passion for this kind of work. Now, if your grades overall for this placement are not that great, it may well be that at the root of this is this concept of passion. You haven't developed the level of passion that you need to be able to embrace this kind of work. So you can't take the capability and say, treat that as a component, because that's applying the same kind of task-based logic that we've been criticizing all morning while we've been talking about this. You have to see the passion or whatever the subjective criteria is as actually explaining something about the whole. So again, it opens up a conversation with the student that says, well, you were brilliant at all. you struggled with all of these tasks, all of these things that you had to do as a paediatric physio, partly because you didn't have passion for it. So I think it would be unlikely that the student would pass all of the tasks brilliantly. You know, they were brilliant at doing suction, and they were brilliant at manual hyperventilation of the baby's lungs, but they had no passion for it whatsoever. Well, you got to think to yourself, you know, well, what kind of physio for this kind of environment does that feel like you are then? So there's this real opportunity to engage in a conversation with the students about what's going on for them and how they feel they're developing as a practitioner.
I think there's two points that you made there that kind of really stood out for me. The one was that the capability isn't something that's a second component of the assessment form. The capabilities are something that gets integrated across the whole assessment process. So it's not like we're watching the student perform a series of tasks and say tick, 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 tick. And then we say, okay, was the student passionate? It's about looking for that passion throughout the process. And I think that's a really interesting way of putting it, because you can apply the same thing with, you know, just I'm thinking of some of the other things that you've done or that you've mentioned, things like inspiring hope. Those kinds of things, you can easily see how those should be integrated throughout everything the student does with the patient rather than just a separate thing that gets assessed at the end. And then when you think about it like that, you can easily see how this approach creates a space for a more holistic, compassionate relationship between student and clinician or supervisor. Because that relationship, or rather the student's development, is dependent on that relationship being a good one. Because it's not like the student is going to just be able to copy whatever the clinician does at the end, which I see in some of the students who I supervise. They say, my clinician does it like this, so I'm just going to do it like that. They're just copying the behaviors of the clinician. And what you're suggesting with this approach is that the student finds their own way of being rather than being able to mimic something that they just see someone else do. It's not about copying the behaviors. It's about practicing a way of being. Which I think is a really powerful way of thinking about the learning relationship in the clinical context.
I think that's absolutely right. And I think what it's also brought home to me, certainly at the end of that first year when we ran the first trial, was that for practitioners who ourselves, we weren't trained to think about these things. We weren't encouraged to think about them. Certainly I wasn't. And I know a lot of my colleagues weren't either. Because we didn't have any formal education in some of these things, we've had to come to them from experience. And then, of course, we're saying to the students, we want to give you some experience of this, and so you can start to develop your own understanding of it. But just imagine how this could be if we devoted as much attention to, say, compassion as we did to anatomy, or we applied to motor control, or we applied to tests for balance reactions or hip instability. And I'm not suggesting necessarily that one is more important than the other, but one certainly gets a lot of attention, the other one gets almost none. And I think part of that's because we think that these capabilities are things that students either have or they don't. You know, that you're born with, the Irish say, the gift of the gab, you know, that you just have compassion or you just have empathy. But we know nobody's born with those things. They're acquired socially. They're acquired through people's experiences and through their life. And most of philosophy is concerned with these concepts, asking, well, what is hope? What is creativity? What is resourcefulness? What is professionalism? And there's a lot of resources out there for us to actually engage in thinking with these students before they get to their placements, to actually talk about these things and unpack them and value them. And I can't see really why we would necessarily value the importance of the students being able to do a Thomas test over the importance of understanding about compassion. I think they're both important, but for some reason, historically, physios have done one and almost none of the other. And I think what this piece of work does is it reminds me, at least, that there's a lot about physiotherapy that we don't credit, that we don't value, and we don't give much credence to. I did a talk on Friday to the Physio New Zealand Leadership Day, and I used a quote in there that really came home to me, and it's from David Hanna, and he says, "All organizations are designed to get, are perfectly designed to get the results they get." And the reason that strikes me so strongly is in a physio context is that what it says is that physios aren't the victims of external forces that are undermining us and taking away our work. The kinds of situations that the profession finds itself now in are a direct result of the way we have designed physiotherapy. Now, to me, if we say that doing endless Thomas tests and musculoskeletal examinations and cardiorespiratory assessments and neurological tests and what have you really matter, and you define physiotherapy in those terms, then you will create physiotherapy in the model that we find it in now. And all of the inherent problems and all of the inherent issues and all of the anxieties we've got about the future are built into the model of physiotherapy we've created. If you say these things that we've talked about these capabilities aren't important, aren't worthy of exploring, conceptualizing, teaching, unpacking with students, evaluating and assessing, writing into our scopes of practice, valuing in the nature of the kind of work we do in researching or writing or practicing, then you take away our ability to say these things matter. And to trade on these things and to explore these things in the broader community. And maybe that, to some extent, is part of the reason why we've got some of the issues we've now got with physiotherapy. So I think there is a broader point here about the value of these things and paying heed to them and making them important.
I think that you're starting to touch on what might be termed a heresy in the profession. I think we're definitely gonna have to have another conversation where we get into these topics in a lot more depth. I think, you know, what you're saying is right. What we assess is what we value. And, you know, if we're gonna say that these things don't matter when it comes to assessment, then we're making an explicit statement about what we value in the profession. And I think what I've really taken away from your experience is that you decided as a department that these things were important and that the ways that you were assessing it were not fitting the way that you thought of the values. And so you changed the assessment to better reflect what it was that you thought was important, rather than trying to force things like empathy and professionalism and compassion, rather than trying to force those things into a tick box assessment form. You changed the form so that it better reflects what those things mean. It's been really kind of an eye-opening conversation. You know, it's made me think very differently about some of the things that we've been talking about in my department. I'm mindful of your time, Dave. I'm going to say thank you very much for giving up your morning. I really appreciate you having the conversation.
Oh, thank you, Michael. It was lovely talking to you as usual, and I hope this is useful.
So we hope that you enjoyed listening into this conversation and that it has stimulated some thoughts about your own teaching. Also, if you've got a topic that you think it would be good for us to discuss on Invita, either in the next session or at a later date after that, then please do let us know, as we're going to be putting suggested topics to the vote within the community to see what people would like to talk about.
And please remember that this community and approach to collaboration is a work in progress, so we'd really appreciate any feedback you have that will help us improve the experience. Or you can join the Google Plus community and participate there.